Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Going to go a little podcast crazy on you this week. We've got the Baseball America Summer College podcast going on right now. I'm sure we'll talk a little college baseball, who signed, who didn't. We might throw some of that into the mix if we want to, Aaron. We'll have our Minor League Player of the Year podcast next Monday, this coming Monday, with the podcast debut of Baseball America's own new national writer, Kerry Buehler. We're very excited about Kerry. Done a great job already in the couple weeks he's been here. Prolific. With his writing. And then we're going to have podcasts for our league top 20 prospects, which are coming up. And that's just going to be, I think, a thrill a minute, actually. Just like this summer top 10 podcast is going to be. Aaron, it's our third year that you and I have been doing summer league top 10s together. And I guess it's about the eighth year that we've done summer college top 10s for leagues beyond just the Alaska and the Cape.
Right.
Let's go over the whole broad landscape of summer college baseball real quick for the uninitiated. Basically, summer college baseball exists because of the vacuum left by the horrible structure of NCAA baseball, which is starting the season in the winter and ending it in the spring. Right. College baseball players are not even boys of summer. You know, now only the college series is played in the actual season of summer. Which I'm explaining to my three-year-old right now with the tilts of the axes of all these planets and stuff. It's a lot of fun, actually.
You know, I actually had a non-college baseball fan ask me last week who I was excited about for the College World Series coming up, and I had to explain to him that it's in June, and that really confused him, because why would you have the College World Series in June? But anyway...
It is confusing if you don't know. And so these summer college leagues... That was a pretty funny way to say it. These summer college leagues exist because college summer baseball does not.
Right.
If the NCAA ever moved the baseball season to the summer, which would be best for everybody, these leagues would cease to exist. And while you'd lose a little something, I honestly would be for that. I think it'd be great.
I know a lot of people who would be. And certainly, of course, in the North, that's something that coaches, you know, Gene Stevenson loves that idea. He's been trumpeting the merit of that idea for a long time, but you know, there's a lot of Sun Belt coaches who I think would get behind it as well, and it's I don't think it's ever going to happen, Joe. And honestly, I think it's a pipe dream, but it's, we can still talk about it.
I think it is, but I mean, all the attention the Little League World Series gets,
exactly,
a lot of that would go to the College World Series if it were played in August, in the first 2 weeks of August, instead of the last 2 weeks in June. So that is why we have these summer college leagues, because, you know, it's good to play baseball in the summer, and college kids like to do that. So now there's just a proliferation of summer college leagues, Aaron, as a lot of them, spurred mostly by the Northwoods League, Coastal Plain League also, a couple other leagues.
NECBL, you could throw in at the same time.
A lot of these leagues that have figured out you could make some money with free labor and a minor league kind of setup, promotions, all that kind of thing. But to me, one of the big effects of the proliferation of summer college leagues, Aaron, has been a dilution of talent throughout summer college baseball. So we do all these prospect lists, and we go top 10, and every league has a couple legitimate prospects. I think it's fair to say that at the bottom of a lot of these top 10 lists are mostly guys who are going to be organization players or top out in AA, or even some who are just going to be really good college players. Is that fair?
Absolutely, it's fair, especially once you get past the first couple of leagues. I do think that I mean, of course, the Cape is the cream of the crop, and you can go, you know, 80 or 100 deep easily on the Cape, as some of our competitors have discovered.
Right, that's right.
But, you know, we've got a list of 30 players in the Cape Cod League who I think are all really legitimate prospects.
And I actually think the Cape itself is a little overrated, personally. I think it teams almost put too much stock in the Cape, but you can really perform in the Cape, and that doesn't mean that you're that good.
Perhaps for performance in the Cape,
yeah,
is overrated as a measuring stick. But I think the talent level is not overrated.
Now that is that you phrased it much better. I agree. Teams put a little too much emphasis sometimes on performance in the Cape. The talent level in the Cape, I do still think, separates itself. Yeah. I think the Northwoods League has usurped the Alaska League and some other older leagues.
I agree.
And the Northwoods League, to me, is clearly the number two league. In the summer college pecking order.
Yeah, I would agree.
When it comes to talent, I think in a lot of other ways it's first.
Draws the best out of all these leagues.
Yep.
And, you know, those are markets up there. You know, and this is something that a lot of college coaches that you hear from up in the Big Ten country, they say, you know, these guys are making a lot of money using our players in our markets. But it's during baseball season.
We spend our money, our scholarship money, we spend our travel budget money to recruit them.
Yeah.
And those guys profit from it.
I think we have this conversation every year this time of year in the podcast. But
we've only had the podcast for a couple of years, so I don't mind having it again.
But anyway, I mean, yes.
You and I have had this conversation probably ever since we started working here. Unfortunately for you. Thankfully for me, we have a lot of new employees, so they all get to hear the same stories churned through over the dozen years I've been here.
Right.
But anyway, let's focus on the Northwoods League, first and foremost, on that list. Jim Callis and I are going to try to do a separate CAPE podcast. Not Jim Callis and I, Jim Callis and Aaron. We're going to try to have a separate CAPE podcast so they can discuss the CAPE Cod League. But let's talk about the other summer college leagues, and we'll start with the Northwoods League, Aaron. You did this list. Corey Vaughn at number one, and that should be familiar to some people, both college and big league fans. He's the son of Greg Vaughn, who hit 50 home runs for the Padres back in 1998. He had a great start at San Diego State this year. It sounds like he still has a lot of work to do, but the upside is pretty significant for this guy.
That's it. He's raw. And you know, he, I think, surprised a lot of people early in the spring coming out and really tearing it up down there at San Diego State. And because everyone you talk to on the West Coast who recruited this guy or saw this guy in the recruiting trail said there's no way he was going to hit at least for the first year in college baseball.
Yeah.
And it turned out as the year, the spring rolled on, he really did have a hard time with breaking balls and his average plummeted. But he's got all the tools. I mean, this guy, the upside is significant. And he's kind of a high-risk, high-reward number one, you know, kind of like a Keon Graves from the Coastal Plain League a couple of years ago who did not, so far at least, hasn't panned out.
Or kind of like Greg Vaughn. Greg Vaughn is a player. His dad had some, you know, years where he hit 220 and struck out a ton.
Yeah.
And a couple other years where he was really locked in and hit 30, 40 home runs, and obviously one time he hit 50.
Right. And I don't see Vaughn, I don't think Corey has his dad's power. But I do think he certainly has power, and he's got speed, and he can play the outfield. He can do a lot of things. So it's just a matter of polishing up those tools. But I really like the power arms in this list behind him.
Well, that's the thing, though, that the Northwoods League has been, to me, that's what sets it apart. The Northwoods League coaches and the staffs up there have done a great job where they recruit some lesser-known power arms. Jordan Zimmerman just sticks out to me.
Sure.
He's now probably the top prospect or one of the top prospects in the national system at NCAA. You're the Nats expert. And he's from a Division III school. And the Northwoods League seems to do a great job. They have a longer season. Guys can really get into a rhythm. You're working against wood bats. Guys can work off the fastball. They go every 5 days. They build up some stamina. You can really, I think, develop. I think the Northwoods League has a good track record recently for developing pitchers, and there were a couple of lesser-known, big, raw arms that went up there this summer and really made some noise.
And you know, one guy who really fits this mold that you're talking about is James Jones from Long Island.
Absolutely.
We ran up to number three on this list, a guy that the people in the Northeast, you talk to scouts up that way, they're excited about this guy for next year. He's just a really lean, athletic, 6'3" left-hander who runs that fastball up to 95 at times. He's got a really good feel for a hard breaking ball, and I mean, this guy is going to go pretty good next year, I think. And he's a premium athlete who also plays first base for Long Island and in the Northwoods League. People think he could play center field. Really, I mean, he's that good of an athlete. He's legit. So, and then you got Mike Nesith from Nebraska, another really good arm who I think is going to be a huge breakout candidate this spring. 6'5" righty, you know, who's been up to 97, 98 or so.
Yeah. Now, there are big raw arms on here. You once again had a freshman. And that's the thing, that this is another growing trend, because I encountered this in a couple of the summer leagues that I did, of high school seniors playing in these summer college leagues. Now, it's not necessarily new. I'm sure it happened before I got to BA, but just in my experience, I distinctly remember Mark Teixeira, summer after his high school senior year, going to the Clark Griffith League. Because there were fewer leagues back then. He went to the Clark Griffith League, and he led the league in home runs playing half a season. He had seven home runs in like 20 games. With a wood bat as a high school senior.
They still talk
college
about that.
Players. I mean, he started building his legend there. So Andy Burns, they're saying boo Burns to Andy Burns in the stands, didn't perform great in the Northwoods League, but this was the best high school player in Colorado this year as a hitter. He was passed as a prospect by Tyler Sample, the right-hander out of Mullen High. But Andy Burns, a solid athlete. If Andy Burns still hit like he hits now and still had his athleticism he had as a high school junior, he would have been higher up on your list. But it sounds like what you heard in the Northwoods League is the same thing I got in the spring with the draft. is that he's lost a little athleticism. He's lost a little first step quickness, right?
So, yeah, there's. I don't think anyone thinks now that he's going to play shortstop
right.
at the professional level. I think he'll play shortstop at Kentucky, and I think he'll be fine.
Part of a great Kentucky recruiting class.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe one of the more unheralded players in that class with Alex Meyer, of course, headlining.
Alias Bubba.
Alias Bubba. it's a shame that they lost Daniel Webb for those guys because they would have had two of the three best or highest ranked, I guess, prospects in the nation. But he ended up at Okaloosa Walton Junior College. So,
anybody else in the Northwoods League list stick out for you? I mean, Carlos Ramirez did for me just because of the catch and throw ability, the defensive catcher. But anybody else who's
he's a guy who could have been higher too, John, because his bat really played in the Northwoods League. People really liked the bat. Incredibly mature offensive approach.
He did have
power to all fields. I mean, this is a guy that the reason he actually was four on this list and not higher is because people wondered actually about his defense at the next level.
Right.
Some people did.
But he does have a fringy arm, and usually you look for arm strength in the catcher. He does everything else so well as a catcher that the arm strength plays up. But he's just going to play the average, though, if he does everything else right.
I'll say this. He will make people forget about Petey Paramore in a hurry this spring at Arizona State.
I completely agree with you. I thought Petey Paramore was overrated in the draft this year, and I completely agree with you. I like Carlos Ramirez a lot in that regard. It's the Baseball America podcast. John Manuel and Aaron Fitt talking a little summer college baseball. Aaron, there are a lot of leagues that we have both done over the years, leagues that we like. Neither one of us did the Valley League this year. I know we both like the Valley League historically, a league that has given us the likes of Yonder Alonso as a number one pick
Blake
over
DeCody,
the years.
Blake DeCody. You know who else I realized? And my first Valley League list in 2005 had Daniel Murphy at number two.
Oh, awesome.
Now with the Mets.
You got to love Danny Murphy. I'm trying to think back in the day on the Boulevard of Linden who I might have really liked, who I might have run up a Valley League list. And I can't remember. I just remember I enjoyed doing it because of the coach, Lawrence Nesselrod. It's impossible not to like talking to
Mike Bocock in that league.
You got Mike Bocock, who's won like five or six Valley League titles. But Lawrence Nesselrod, he's a stud. Just a great guy.
Absolutely.
Great guys in that league. As a matter of fact, and it was either the Coastal Plain League or the Valley League one year that had Justin Verlander for his freshman year. I distinctly remember that and being like, yep, I know that guy's a stud. I just started looking at the league and going, okay, I know who my number one is. Because I'd seen Verlander pitching against Duke that year, and I knew he was the real deal. But the Valley League list, prominent by the absence of any Miami players, which is interesting to me. Anybody stick out on this Valley League list for you that our intern Jesse Burkhart did?
I like Mickey Wiswald from Boston College at number nine, a guy who was highly regarded coming out of high school in the Northeast, went to BC, highly regarded as a hitter.
Okay.
And he's got arm strength. There are some questions about position at the next level. Will he have enough power for corner? But this guy can really hit, and I think he's going to be a breakout guy in the ACC this year. One other guy who actually didn't make his list that I know Jesse was debating was Riley Cooper from Florida.
Oh, yeah, interesting guy.
A football guy who just really, really did not hit at all this summer in the Valley with Wood. But certainly we know he's athletic and his pedigree. I mean, he was highly regarded coming out of high school as well.
Well, see, that's the thing. We talked about earlier how some of these leagues don't even really have 10 guys. Some of them, like the Northwoods League, you left out Aaron Senna, a Missouri outfielder who you like, but just didn't perform in the context of that league.
Right.
A guy like a Brian Pearl, a hard-throwing closer, who got some support, but it wasn't across-the-board support, but is an intriguing power arm. Other guys every year on Jim's capeless who don't make the top 30, but who are interesting guys, we're not going to list all 100 guys.
One more name
I think 100.
I think that's excessive. One more name, by the way, in Northwoods that you're talking about is Mitch Moorman, 6'6" right-hander from Des Moines Area Community College, where he'll be teammates with Patrick Cooper.
Absolutely. I've been one prospect in the Jayhawk League.
Exactly. But Mitch Moorman did not pitch quite enough to qualify for the Northwoods League list, but he's up to 94 miles an hour. He's got really good stuff. There's going to be a lot of scouts in the Midwest making the trip to Des Moines this spring.
Well, another thing about the Valley League list that stood out to me is the Luray Wranglers. Well, first of all these Valley League cities are all like coming up in my Civil War reading.
Is that awesome. Right?
Oh, yeah, Winchester. There was like an arms cache at Winchester that the Union troops were going after, all that kind of stuff. Well, I'm not going to digress too much, but so I enjoy just reading the Valley League list. But Ryan Schimpf of the Luray Wranglers, number one prospect. LSU, very prominent throughout summer college baseball. They had a couple guys in the top 10 in the Cape Cod League. Jared Mitchell, I believe, was he in the Cape this summer or was he not? Leon Landry was the number one in prospect in one of our summer leagues as well, was he not? Like Clark Griffith.
Leon Landry was number one in the Clark Griffith. LSU had four players ranked in leagues that we...
besides the Cape.
Well, I think that's including the Cape.
Oh, okay.
That was, which was second only to Texas, which had five. Because
you had
most.
DJ LeMahieu up
DJ
in the
DJ LeMahieu was up there, yep. I don't know that Jared Mitchell played summer ball.
I think I was lumping him in. I know I had a football player also in one of my leagues. That's where also I was going to go linking with Riley Cooper. Because our number one prospect in the West Coast Collegiate League is Jake Locker.
There you go.
Jake Locker, the quarterback at Washington, who has not completed 50% of his passes in 1 year as a starter and then one game this year. He almost rushed for 1,000 yards last year. Did you know that? He rushed for 960 yards
for
Washington.
Did not complete 50% of his passes,
no.
But he made up for it with his legs.
Yeah, absolutely. Like. Well, see, I don't know if he made up for it because I don't think UW was all that good.
Sure.
I think UW's still looking to have the ring looks. But Jake Locker hasn't played college baseball. He'll be draft eligible this year, and I think it was very savvy by Jake Locker. Now, he said on Pac-10 Media Day he's done with baseball, but why did he play summer college baseball in the summer before his draft year?
Right.
He just did it to give scouts a little taste, and this is a guy who out of high school was a legit two-way guy, got a lot of comps to Grady Sizemore, only it was Grady Sizemore with a little less feel for hitting, but a better arm.
Wow.
Because Grady Sizemore's arm is his weakest tool. Jake Locker was 96 off a mound in high school playoff game. This guy's a freak athlete. And the other great part about it is when you talk to people about Jake Locker, you know, the coaches in that league and scouts, they all turn into football fans when you start talking about Jake Locker. And they all break it down as a football player, too. he runs too upright. You know, I got that several times. And you know, you look at his completion percentage. He's not accurate. He's not a pro passer. Look at Ty Willingham's track record developing passers. That's not very good. You know, like people start breaking down that kind of stuff. So there's no doubt that Jake Locker is on people's radar. And we wouldn't have ranked him number one, Aaron, if it weren't for the fact that he's got such prodigious talent. Because that might be the best number two.
Yeah, exactly.
In any league, Josh Oshich is legit.
That's what I was going to say, John, is you know Locker's got to be a pretty special talent to edge out Josh Oshich, a guy that I know I'm really high on. I know a lot of people are. I mean, just a left-hander with incredible arm strength. I mean, what is he, up to 98 this summer?
Up to 98 in short stints, sitting 92, 96, and with the, as Will Lingo would say, necessary arrogance to go with it to succeed. Area scout up there tells a story, I think it's kind of an apocryphal story, I don't think it happened to him, where a scout came up to Osich this summer after a game and said, how'd you 98 today? You know, how'd that, is that for real? And he goes, oh, yeah, I was only 87 to 90 in high school, but you guys didn't like me that much back then. You know, I mean, like, he's very kind of cocky about it in a good way. Oregon State, it really is an embarrassment of riches at Oregon State because they also have Taylor Starr, a heart-throwing kind of setup guy, basically. They have Kevin Roderick. They have Tanner Robles. They have George Reyes, Jorge Reyes, your College World Series most outstanding player in 2007. You got Greg Peavy. Am I leaving somebody out? I think I'm leaving somebody
out. Those are the main power arms, I think.
Yeah, Gerbevac. Mark Gerbevac is still around. He's still kicking it.
I believe you're right.
Some beaver flavor, if I remember correctly. It's crazy how much pitching they have. We'll see if they get any offense to go with it.
Did you mention Taylor Starr?
I did mention Taylor Starr at the beginning of the peroration. And David Robertson, by the way, who signed, you know, was a D3 player transferred there this year.
Tearing up minor league ball, isn't it?
He's, like, set a record for the Northwest League in hits. As bad as their season was this year, 28-24, not getting the postseason, still good things happening for the O-State Ballers.
They were disappointing this year, John, but really this was kind of a transition year for them. I mean, it was a matter of breaking in. The biggest thing that was disappointing for them was their veterans did not live up. I mean, Mike Stutz and Jorge Reyes are our B.A., College preview cover boys.
And Mike Stutz having a great year in pro ball, too, by the way.
But in the New York Penn League, I believe.
Yeah, and also the Sally League. He's already in the Sally League, and he's performed very well.
But I think now, I mean, they really have no excuse. Those guys as sophomores have to take a leap forward, and I think Oregon State, I had them in May for Omaha after the College World Series. I think that they should get back there this year. I believe that.
I'm with you. That's where I was headed with that. Because with that kind of pitching, right-handed, left-handed, power arms, command guys, it's going to be a tough first year for Oregon. Let's put it that way. I think the O-State Ballers are going to make things difficult for the Ducks. Good God. I really need some coffee. But they're going to make things tough on George Horton and company.
Interestingly, I think just on paper, looking at the season, I think you've got the two easily best or at least most talented pitching staffs.
North Carolina and Oregon State.
North Carolina and Oregon State.
That joke isn't funny anymore, as Morrissey said. It's the Baseball America podcast. He's Aaron. I'm John, making the Smiths references. NECBL, New England Collegiate Baseball League, Aaron. Sounds like Michael Ault, or Ault, I should say, sophomore Connecticut. He sounds like an interesting drug.
He is.
To get back to Morrissey. This is a guy who played briefly in the Cape on a temporary contract and impressed, but then went to the NECBL. Looks like he ended up being, obviously, our number one prospect, but he really performed in the spring with UConn, and he followed it up this summer.
He had a great freshman year. He was a guy that talked to area scouts up that way this summer, and they said, you know, we just blew it in this guy. I mean, you know, they saw him in high school, and nobody was particularly impressed. I don't think he was drafted out of high school.
He's the Christian Friedrich of the Northeast, only a shortstop. Because Christian Friedrich was completely messed up.
Same
high
deal,
school.
Huh? Yeah. But this guy, I mean, people already are saying, you know, he's a guy. Watch out for him next year. And I don't know. I don't think he's a first round kind of guy, but I think he's a top three rounds kind of guy.
You never know, college middle infielders.
Yeah. Well, I'd say there is some question whether he'll play shortstop at the next level.
Okay.
I think he might be more of a third baseman type guy down the road, but his bat will play, I believe. So he's exciting. And UConn is the number two guy on this list, also with Dan Mahoney. A guy who...
UConn represent. What's going on here?
And Dan Mahoney, of course, is a personal favorite because he's a product of Cushing Academy in Ashburnham, Massachusetts, where I went to high school. So
that is
I didn't go to Cushing. I went to the public school in town. But, anyway, Dan Mahoney
is... You didn't go to no academy.
But Dan Mahoney is an interesting guy also. I think this league was down a little bit from last year when you had
Steven Strasburg.
Obviously, that kind of talent is a once a decade kind of a get for the NECBL, for really any league. I mean, that guy is an incredible talent. But that league also had guys like Kyle Bellows last year, who we really liked.
And, I am Kyle Bellows.
And A.J. Pollock, I think, was in that league.
A.J.
Really
Pollock
good
was in that league, and Jason Gusty was in that league.
Gusty,
St. John's.
Who has been a little disappointing, but
he was intriguing last summer.
He was, but this, I mean, this league does have some interesting guys still. I like some of the arms. I don't think there's a lot of high upside arms. I mean, like Casey Harmon is a guy that people like, but what's he going to be really? Is he a number five starter? Best case scenario, maybe a bullpen guy. He just doesn't throw that hard right now.
I do love that he's a Vermont guy and he went to Clemson. I mean, if you're a good Vermont player and
you
don't go to Clemson, you're probably not that good. I mean,
Bill Currier does a good job up there getting a lot of Vermont guys.
He does, but the best guys, Jack Leggett comes in and gets.
Yeah.
He's very, because he owns his old state, Vermont. He owns the Green Mountain Boys. Which league should we go to next, Aaron? What's the other league
we haven't
you want
talked
to talk
about Alaska yet, John. We're kind of jumping around here, but I think this is a fun little podcast.
No, I like jumping around as well, and getting up and getting down. But, yeah, Alaska League was down this year, and it's easy to say that, but I think the Alaska League is a very tangible reason why it's not as good as it used to be, and that's the West Coast Collegiate League. The West Coast Collegiate Baseball League is a big-time, it's the best league in the West now, in my opinion, summer college baseball.
See,
Josh Osich would rank number one in this league, for sure, and Taylor Starr would be right up there with Stephen Fish back at the top of this league. I like the Alaska League, but it's hard to get to. And it's not.
And you know what else, John? I think maybe people are less excited to go up there ever since they had the new governor elected up there. I think Sarah Palin was maybe a little bit of a deterrent, but we won't go down that road.
Well, we can't escape Alaska in the news these days. But the other thing is the West Coast Collegiate League has Nike's money behind it. Nike runs the Corvallis Knights. The Corvallis Knights won the West Coast Collegiate League.
Yeah.
They are a powerhouse.
They are.
They've taken the old Pacific International League and kind of taken it apart. That semi-pro summer league up there, the only team that's left up there basically is the Seattle Studs. This team has a team in Canada and Kelowna, one of the birthplaces of Baseball America, Kelowna/White Rock, where we were founded. So you've got, the West Coast Collegiate League is a really great, well-run league. And you can't talk about Alaska, I don't think, without talking about the WCCBL, because in the past, two things, in my experience, really sustained Alaska. It was the best league for Pac-10 players. Pac-10 players either went to the Cape or they went to Alaska, period. And Stanford and some other schools really supported the Alaska League, and now those players are kind of like a Stanford diaspora a little bit this summer. This league is getting a little bit more junior college every year, the Alaska League. That doesn't mean that's not necessarily bad, but it's just a little bit less good every year, it seems like. But there were some interesting arms up there. Stephen Fishback, Garrett Richards. Not a whole lot of consensus. I can't believe I haven't changed Joey Turdoslavich, the top-ranked position player in this league, has actually transferred from Miami to Long Beach State. Got that confirmed by Jim Morris III himself. He's no longer attending the University of Miami. But one of the most intriguing guys, the thing is no one can agree on the position players in this league. Brent Hardy was the top guy for some people. He was an undrafted junior out of Alabama-Birmingham. The other guys really question his ability to hit velocity. Turdoslavich is definitely the best bat, but where's the position?
Well, I tell you what, though, John, I like Turdoslavich, and he's a guy that when I picked Miami as my sleeper eight for Omaha this year after the College World Series, one reason for that was because I believed Joey Turdoslavich would step in and help fill that offensive void left by guys like Alonzo and Raven leaving. I think they're going to miss not having him around. I don't know the details for why he transferred. And
right.
I assume he's going to have to sit out a year if he's going to Long Beach State. There's got to be. I mean, that's, to me, that's a strange choice. I don't know the details behind it. I don't know if he was dismissed or what. I don't want to speculate. But they're going to miss that bat. I think he's going to hit.
They're going to miss that bat. There's no doubt they're going to miss that bat. And that's the one thing. Alaska had some good arms, but they're mostly relievers, guys who profile as relievers. But Alaska also had better hitters. Even though the hitting in Alaska was down, the hitting in Alaska was better. The position player prospects were better than the West Coast Collegiate League. And I'll throw out my one West Coast Collegiate League sleeper I couldn't quite find room for or support for to put in the top 10. But Steven Yarrow, rising sophomore, University of San Francisco. But that's my pick to click for 2009. Keep an eye on Steven Yarrow. The guy can hit. Got to find a position for him. See if he retains his athleticism. But he's a Reno area. Oh, not a Reno. He's a Tahoe area guy. Very deep cut out of high school. I think Steven Yarrow is going to be a factor in the West Coast Conference coming up 2009-2010. He hit well in the WCCB, but the rest of his game a little shaky to the point where I didn't feel like I could rank him. We haven't mentioned the Coastal Plain League. This is one of the better leagues. They also have one of the better number one guys.
Yeah, I like Deck McGuire a lot. The guy who I believe just missed freshman All-America honors for us this
week. I think he was second team, wasn't he? Or was he on that? Or did we just? Oh no, he just missed the second team.
Because I think Thane Simon beat him out because Thane Simon from Santa Clara was better
That's
in
it.
Conference than
That's
McGuire.
It.
But Deck McGuire was good this spring. I mean, he beat Georgia, I believe, twice, and Georgia, of course, nearly won the national championship. But this guy is, I think he projects really well. I mean, I think he's about 6'6", a lot of sink. I think he's going to add some velocity right now. He's up to about 91.
Is he basically the number two starter right now in Georgia Tech behind Zach Von Tersch?
Yeah, I think, you know what, and he might be, honestly, wouldn't be shocked if he's their Friday guy this year as a sophomore. I think he's very polished. He's got a good four-pitch mix, and he's exciting. I mean, he's a guy that for next year's draft, I think, the 2010 draft, rather, you know, he could sneak up into that first round, I think.
The rest of this league, just eyeballing it,
yeah,
looks a little down.
Yeah, I thought
you just don't
I
anticipate the Coastal Plain League number two guy being from Canisius, number three
from
Mercyhurst.
I'll say this for Kevin Mahoney. He was a guy who had a huge junior year there, and I was really surprised he went undrafted because he has some tools, and he doesn't profile really well.
But he just sounds like he's unorthodox. He performs, but he doesn't sound like he does things any way that would be called classic.
He just absolutely tore up the league up there. Managers were in love with the guy. Even the scouts who saw him here and there said, you know, this guy can play. I'm, you know, people were surprised he wasn't drafted. But I think as a number two prospect, I would rather have a younger, high upside kind of a guy. And in this league, it was a lot of the guys in this list are older. There were not a lot of those, you know, usually you have guys in this league who are freshmen or sophomores that are
right
about to make the leap. And I mean, even, you know, our number three guy, Steve Greif, I like. He's got an electric arm, but he's an undersized right-hander. I mean, he's up to 94, but he's probably a middle relief type guy down the road.
I'm a little surprised Parker Bangs didn't rank higher on this list. Did we not see Parker Bangs in the regional, the super regional against NC State?
I believe we did
see Parker Bangs.
By that point of the season, he pitched a lot. But
He wasn't that great, but NC State's lineup also wasn't too great at the end of the year either. It was a real pitching-oriented team. But the interesting thing to me about this league is that it's still, when it's at its best, is when it's getting a lot of freshmen from ACC and SEC schools.
Yeah.
So that's really one of the best things about the Coastal Plain League. When it's a good year for them, they're good deep freshman classes in those leagues.
Like the Deck McGuires.
Exactly.
But they just didn't have a lot of guys like that this year.
Right. No, that's the way it seems. Another league that you want to touch on here, Aaron, before we wrap up, we did have some other interesting number one prospects. Jordan Danks, second time in 3 years. He was the Mink League. He's the number one reason why we do the Mink League top 10 prospects list, because he's played in that league. last year. In both, each of the last 2 years, the Mink League's number one prospect has been a drafted junior or redshirt sophomore who's signed. Last year, Charlie Shirek. This year, Jordan Dankety Danks. Both signed by the White Sox. I believe that's a 100% coincidence. But is there another league that you want to touch on before we wrap up?
The Texas Collegiate League this year isn't what it once was. There's only four teams in the league now. And they didn't really have the same kind of usually they'll have a few players from Texas and Rice and maybe A&M that really kind of make this league float. But this year, they did have some interesting arms. Particularly from Alabama, I liked Del Howell and Jimmy Nelson a lot. I think those are two guys that you're going to see a lot of this year. I think Alabama is going to have a pretty good team, John.
That would be interesting to see the tide bounce back a little bit here. They're bouncing back in football, so maybe they're just the rising tide lifting all boats.
Their freshman class kind of flew under the radar this past year, but... they've got a good young core, and Nelson and Howell are two guys that I think will make the leap this year as well. So that's something to keep an eye on. I think Alabama's, I don't know if it's fair to call them a sleeper, because they could be a top 25 team in the preseason. But I right now I see them as a team that will rebound next year.
And also good to see Luke Burnett, who just was awful this spring for Louisiana Tech, one of the most disappointing teams in the country, frankly. The Bulldogs.
Yeah, really.
But Luke Burnett was a big reason for that. He was just terrible. He was awful. He was kind of a knucklehead, I guess you'd say. Not really, but he had a bad spring. Still gets $200,000, resuscitates, makes himself a little bit of money in the Texas Collegiate League. Interesting to see that he's not pitching downhill. Yeah. With that big-time velocity. He still doesn't have his old velo back. But
it sounds like there was some tendonitis. It was a factor this spring that maybe was... He took 6 weeks off, and his velocity was a little bit better this summer. It still wasn't what it once was. I think it's a great sign for the Mariners.
I agree.
This is a guy who does have some upside. He was up to 98 in the Cape last year and ranked high on that list. So, he's interesting.
We'll touch on really quickly a league that, to me, seems like it just keeps getting better. Cal Ripken Senior League. That's a good league. And there's a dominant franchise there, the USIS Orioles. Is that good for a league's talent level, or is it not good in your mind? It seems like it's good because they have the top six prospects in the league. Eight of the ten?
They dominate this league every year, and that's just the way it is. I mean, Dean Albany runs that Orioles franchise. He's got his ties to the Baltimore Orioles, of course, as an area guy there, and... when they go to Johnstown every year, and I think they win it every year. Yeah, so it's a really good program they have, and they had a couple other guys in this league who didn't pitch or play enough to qualify, who were really interesting guys. So there were some other teams that had some players worth talking about, but this league has produced players the last few years. They had Evan Fredrickson in this league a couple of years ago, and
back when he was struggling at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, exactly, and he was exactly what he is today. He was a lefty with huge stuff and really shaky command. But
he is who we thought he was, or something like that. I can't even think of a Dennis Green analogy.
Yeah, close enough for me.
Sure, okay, but I like that league. The Ripken League to bring it all back to the start. The Ripken League is one of these newer leagues that's well run. It's one running kind of as a business, not just in the cave, they just kind of like roll the balls out there and bring your lawn chair and let's hang out and we'll pass the hat. And that's wonderful. I love that about the Cape. That's not the trend. Most summer college leagues are not like that. They're run like the minor leagues, but with free labor, basically. So the best part about it is that you have college players who don't get to play as much during the year, and especially pitchers who don't have as much pressure, who learn to pitch off their fastball. It's great for hitters to get experience hitting with wood, too, but let's face it, they're going to do that anyway. They can do that in college in the fall. Or, I still think it'd be great if the NCAA, just all the money that was spent on bats in these summer college leagues, is spent on wood bats for Division I. If you had Division I-A and you had 1AA, you got the College Series subdivision and the, whatever subdivision for the second tier of college baseball if you wanted to. But, again, that's my pipe dream. I digress. So summer college baseball has a lot of great things about it, but to me the best thing is for the pitchers to get out there and to learn to throw the fastball. And especially the guys who make the most progress for me are the guys who learn to throw their fastball inside. You just don't get that in college baseball. People just don't know how to throw inside when they're throwing a metal bat. So
I know
I painted the summer college leagues a little bit negatively on the way in as like an almost unnecessary evil, but there's a lot of development that goes on that I think is important. But then again, that leads you to who do you want doing this development? The summer college league coaches, in a lot of cases, are high school coaches, or they're college assistant coaches or their small college coaches. Do you want those guys doing the development, or do you want Steve Smith and Babe Van Horn and Mock Fox and Pat Casey and Ray Tanner and Jack Leggett? Do you want these the big-time college coaches doing that development? For me, I'd rather have the main college coaches and their staffs and those resources brought to bear.
That brings us down an entirely different road, though, which is the wood bats in college baseball.
It does.
Discussion, which, of course, you know, I think that road's been covered pretty well.
We don't want that podcast. Nobody wants to hear that podcast. Anything else before we wrap up, Aaron?
I think we covered most of the key things I wanted to talk about.
Tyler Hess, Kevin Keyes, California Collegiate League. Very interesting.
Boy, did we not talk about the California Collegiate League?
No, we didn't.
This is another league that I think has come a long way in a hurry, and it's I think similar to the Cal Ripken League.
You've got
the one dominant franchise, but the league itself seems like it's well run. And you know the Foresters are kind of the West Coast Yost's Orioles.
That's exactly right. Your NBC champions, NBC World Series champions, the Santa Barbara Foresters, Bill Pintard. Here's how dominant this program is. They split their squad this year, Aaron, for a week. They took the main guys, went to Cuba, played the Cuban national team for three games. Meanwhile, they're split squads back in the Cal Collegiate League playing three games without them.
Huh.
How awesome is that? Summer college team was split squad. But to me, the most intriguing guys in this league were a couple freshmen. Josh Poitras, who's going to Fresno State, unsigned 16th round pick.
Sounds like a great talent.
And he's got an athletic, intriguing guy. Athletic left-hander. Sounds a little bit like Troy Patton to me, to be honest with you. Chris Joyce, another athletic left-hander. UC Santa Barbara definitely would have been a draft this year, a higher draft than 10th round. If he hadn't had some arm issues, he had some shoulder fatigue.
Those guys, John, are going to be stacked this year. I think they've got their entire weekend rotation back for the most. And they might
the Gauchos. No, they do have that. They have Mario Hollins.
Ford is back, isn't he?
I think Mike Ford is back.
Chuck Huggins might have signed. I think he's
Chuck Huggins was a senior. He signed, but you'll add Chris Joyce. It would be awesome to see that. Bob Bronson is now your head of the rules committee. One of the all-time good guys in college baseball. Tom Myers, our recruiting coordinator, does a great job. And also, let's face it, it'll be good for college baseball if the Gauchos are good. Jim Rome will talk college baseball. It will be awesome. Baseball America podcast for Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. We are out.